This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my sports in one app, like the National Women's Soccer League, included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at YouTube.com/The Dan Patrick Show.
You are listening to The Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Dan, I wanted to start with, and for people who don't know, okay, so my show is daily, 3 to 5 Eastern time on Fox Sports Radio, foxsportsradio.com, iHeart app, and of course we have an hour live podcast that's from 5 to 6. You can pick it up whenever, but we do it, you know, in the third hour of the show. Dan, of course, part of that show, and then Dan has his own show on weekends, plus he has his own I Want Your Flex podcast, which will, I would encourage you to download because it'll get you ready for this upcoming NFL season. But I want to start with the Michael Orr story, only in that, look, there's all kinds of little stories we can get to, right? Brock Purdy has thrown 10 camp interceptions. I don't know if we care about that or the Trey Lance. Do they even want him in San Francisco? We could get to the abject disaster, which is the Eric Bieniemy relationship right now with the Washington Commanders. There's only one quasi holdout. It's Josh Jacobs, but you feel like he's going to show up right before the first week of the season and then play on that franchise tag because he doesn't really have any options. There's lots of little stories we could get to, but this is a story that it, Jay Stu, I thought you said it best, right? It crosses, there's so many different elements to it, right? But I think the overarching thing is, and this is kind of where we are as a society. Okay, so stick with me for a second. In my lifetime, there's, you know, 10 of these sorts of stories, right? Of guy from nothing, Jimmy Butler was once homeless, right? Now he's Jimmy Buckets. Kurt Warner was stocking shelves at a grocery store while playing in Europe and Arena League or whatever, and then becomes the NFL's MVP and a Hall of Fame quarterback. There are... We by the way, we never do riches to riches. No one ever grew up with money. No one's ever like, man, I grew up, I had no issues, 3-car garage, and oh yeah, by the way, I made it. Everybody, it's rags to riches, but these top them all. In the changing someone's life through helping by helping from a family, there's so many elements to it, right? This is in Memphis, Tennessee. And you have white family, black athlete. You have kid comes from no means and mom with personal issues to a solid, stable family. That it literally became what we would call, again, this is child of the 80s, it's an afternoon special. Right? You guys remember what days were those on, guys, where you get home and there's an afternoon school special?
And midweek all, for sure. They were never on Fridays.
I felt like Wednesday yeah, was the after school special. Right? And maybe now you say, well, it's a Lifetime movie. But this was a real movie because we were told it's a real story because it's a real book. And you take all the other elements to it. And to start the week, you felt like, oh my gosh, this family's taking advantage of this kid. Like, this is terrible. The entire story appeared to be fraudulent because, based upon one lawsuit, there are allegations that they fleeced him. They literally exploited his name, image, and likeness. Of course, now as the other side of the story comes out and other pieces come out, the most recent part, Dan, and I know you know this. I don't know if everybody else has been paying attention because this story, I don't know if I can't get enough of, but I just want to see it play out before I make some true determination into what and who I believe. The latest is that the Tuohy family doesn't want to have the conservatorship anymore. And, of course, the lawyer came out with some stinging barbs going back 2 days ago. And Michael Lewis, who, of course, was the author and then helped write the movie, Michael Lewis has come out and said, look, this is a Hollywood thing, essentially saying it's a bad contract and Hollywood made $300 million and these people only made $300,000, which they split up evenly amongst everybody. I don't know. It's just a fascinating story, yeah. Dan. You and I, we work together every day, but we haven't because you've been filling in for Covino and Rich, who've been filling in for Dan. Where are you on this whole
thing? Did a complete 180. If you would have talked to me on Monday, I would have been like, gosh, how dare they do this to Michael Orr?
Yeah.
How dare they do this? 24 hours later, I'm like, this is bogus. And the reason is just because I just felt who had the most to gain in all of this. And then I found out that Michael Orr's got a book out or coming out or is out and had been making some of the media rounds with some of this. And then I thought, Doug, to myself, how in the world could this family have imagined that this story would be not only turned into a movie, but make the, what, $300 million that you said that it ended up making that would lead to Sandra Bullock winning an Oscar for? There is no possible way that family could have known that or have this be the plan for it to work out for them to then want to screw Michael Orr over and not give him any money.
Yeah, we do this all the time, though. Right. And I'm not saying just you. I saw it in real time with so many people in the media. I don't know what becomes of the Brett Favre story. But remember, there was a good week last year during football season where Brett Favre was the worst human being on earth. Now, I don't think that some of the ways in which he went about trying to raise money for the facilities at Southern Miss were perfect. But I also think that as more and more evidence comes out, it doesn't appear that there's any sort of way in which he thought, okay, they're going to use welfare money, right? Like, it's one thing to call somebody who's got a grant, who's sitting on cash and go like, hey, man, can you donate to my school? This will really help me out. This will really help us out. It's a whole other thing to say, like, could you use the money meant for welfare recipients in the poorest state in the union? Let's take food literally out of mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters' hands and put it into a volleyball facility, right? There's a difference there. And I get it, right? Like, when salacious accusations come out, it's like cocaine to all of us in the media. We're like, oh my gosh, we do it all the time. And now when it comes out, I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. I did think it was a little much. Now, here's where I knew there was something up for a long time is I think all of us on some level have had Michael Orr on back when he was a young, burgeoning, we thought would be star in the NFL, and because we knew the story. But I don't think he's ever spoken about it because every time I've ever had him on or asked to have him on, I've gotten the, hey, look, you can have him on. He's great. But you can't talk about he don't want to talk about the blind side. He want to talk about him, how he's raised. What were you saying, Chase? Go ahead.
There's one exception. Remember, when he wrote his first book, I think it was 2011, he did a media tour. And that was, I think it was called Against All Odds or something like that. Or maybe I'm confusing it with a Phil Collins song. But he did address a lot of this. He wanted to kind of set straight the record from his actual story to the story in the movie. I just don't think he went this hard at the family back then.
Well, there's obviously, I mean, this is this one that we're coming back from? right? Like, there's this one's a that's going to be hard to rebuild any sort of relationship there. Right. Hey, listen, I know I accused you of stealing $15 million from me, but we're good now, right?
I'll tell you what. Yes, on the surface, it does sound like that. But if the family dynamic was the same in both ways, I think you'd be surprised at what could heal. As crazy as it sounds, like the accusations, if you know one of us did it to the other person, there would be no relationship, even though we work closely together. But if this is supposed to be the family unit that, and it works for both sides, maybe the Tui family feels one way and Orr obviously feels the other way. But if that is still there, I think that there could be a mending no matter how horrendous this.
It's interesting you point that out because I would agree with you. I do think that all relationships, when they're based, you know, when you dig through all the gobbledygook, right, you go through, I mean, obviously you'd have to go through a lot of therapy. You know, I still think there's probably a tremendous amount of love. And, you know, what happens is people stop talking. And I'm like, again, I'm totally guessing from 30,000 feet here.
Sure.
But you're guessing that here's Michael Orr, who is on a trajectory to success, to making $100 million. His NFL career didn't work out. Right. And now he starts looking through things and people have been saying, like, bro, you made how much from that movie? You made what? Excuse me? You know, and you know, you get around people who continue to kind of stoke that fire and you don't actually sit down and have conversations with it. It's no different than any sort of marriage breakdown or family breakdown. When you stop talking, you start making up the stories in your head and you start taking snippets of what other people say to you and you create a narrative of your own. And there is definitely a room for redemption, especially if it truly is kind of based upon, you know, love and appreciation for each other. We're not close to that point right now. Right? Because it's not like Michael Orr is like, yeah, hey, my bad.
Yeah, it's way off in the distance. And I also find it interesting, Doug, from what you said at the outset of the show, specifically with this show that we are currently sitting in for the guys for, the Dan Patrick Show. And what is the conversation about Rudy and what Joe Montana said about the movie Rudy? Nobody wants to believe it. Nobody wants to believe that this great blindside story didn't actually turn out like this or actually wasn't like this. And that's the part that's like, if we found out that in Hoosiers, you know, Jimmy doesn't make the shot, if that, you know, didn't happen and it was a fictional story, we'd be like, oh, that's kind of a letdown. But then we feel like, hey, this did happen. This happened at Milan High School in the 1950s. This actually happened. There's something that is tied to it. And so now to have this, I feel that there's a different emotional reaction because you want to believe it's true. I mean, how many years ago did Joe Montana try to shoot down the Rudy, you know, script on this show, and the guys still talk about it? And I think that's a part of this as well, and why, for everything that you said at the outset of why it still affects us right now, is because the story was so good. I don't know if it's, you know, too good to be true, but we don't want it to not be that story.
Is the Kurt Warner the only story that's too good to be true that really is? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that one's pretty amazing if you really kind of get down to it. Like, he goes from Arena League and then playing in Europe and really the third string quarterback with the Rams.
The grocery store.
The grocery store thing.
Yes.
To the greatest show on turf. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, the other element to it was, you know, with the bad was a finger or a hand when he was in New York. They couldn't play him. Like, he went, this was my thing. Kurt's a friend, and he's an awesome, awesome dude. And by the way, like, I don't know how many people know this, he's got a gym at his house, and so he always has people over to play, like, 4-on-4. It's like, it's kind of like three-quarter court length, and you always want to be on Kurt's team because he does make every call and makes a lot of shots, but he's getting the calls. Anyway, but, like, his Hall of Fame resume was hard because he had, like, 4 years where he's arguably or inarguably the best quarterback in the league. But he had like 5 years where he couldn't really play. Like, he was bad. And he was a backup. Like, within the context of his, that's not even taking into account how he made the league, etc. But the thing about Kurt is, like, he made it from nowhere, then lost it, then was a backup, then made it again in Arizona. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. And it's one of those, like, there's no way. It's too good to be true. And it's not. But the Orr story does appear to be, at least on some level, too good to be true. I just wish we could kind of like, you guys ever seen Mystery Science Theater 3000?
Long time ago, but yes.
Okay, so Mystery Science, Jay Stu, you didn't say anything, so you've never seen
it. No, I remember it. It's kind of, and then Cheap Seats came after it, kind of ripped it off.
Right, right. And it's basically, you know, you had, the idea was these this guy and a robot, and was there like a dog or something? Can't remember. But they're stuck in space, and so they have to watch these terrible B-movies, because it's the only thing that they have. And they just make smart-ass comments the entire time. Right? I just wish we had, like, Michael Orr while that movie's being played and say, like, well, here's what really happened. Yeah, that's not really how it took place. I don't know. That may be a bummer, too. So I'm not sure. Okay, so Dan's done a 180. Where are you, Jay Stu, on this story? Who do you believe as of Thursday, August 17th?
It sure doesn't look good for Michael Orr's side of the story. And I think when the receipts come out, I think the family's probably going to come out looking like they didn't do a whole lot wrong here. I think it's sad, though. Rich Ornberger was in for you earlier in the week, and he had said something along the lines of, this is sad regardless, because if this is a pure money play, that means Michael probably went through all of his money, which is sad, because you can't spend that money. That means you got bad advice, financial advice, and he wouldn't be the first nor the last. But the whole thing just stinks. I think I was at that phase on Monday, and I'm still at that phase. But yeah, that's kind of where it's at. It seems to be leaning towards the family, but I think we'll reserve all final opinions.
John Ramos, how about you?
I just think I agree with Jason. I just think it's sad. It's sad that something that was so powerful, you know, winning Sandra Bullock an Oscar and just kind of being a good feel-good story has come to this level right now.
Is it sad or is it too bad? Because there are levels.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's too bad. But if you go,
I'll go with sad, but you're going to go with too bad.
I'm going to go with that's too bad.
You're going to go with that's too bad, not sad?
Yeah.
I really thought Dan was doing the lyrics of an 80s pop band or something.
No,
really,
but I did want to say, remember when Michael Orr sat down and said, take a look at me now? After you made your Against All Odds reference?
Ah, nice.
Phil Collins is one of those guys. He went bald early.
Jeez.
So he never really aged, even when he aged, right? It's one of those. I took one of my daughters to a barbecue joint yesterday, and we walked by a guy, and I said, like, Grace, did you see that guy's hair? She's like, yeah, what about it? I go, like, did you look a little closer? She's like, no, why? I was like, dude, that's the worst rug I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
But he was a young guy. He's a good-looking dude, but, you know, I mean, he had, like, the it looked like the whole top was gone, and then he had some real hair on the side, and I don't know if it was a chia pet, like, planted in there, or if it was just one of those sticker things going on. I don't know, but it looked bad. It's just like one of those you want to grab and go, like, dude, what are you doing? Like, it's okay. People are bald today.
I've always had a very good inkling for calling out or knowing someone with a toupee since I was young, in my younger days.
I agree. My gaydar is bad. My gaydar is bad, but my radar on hair pieces is good. Right? I don't know if you guys, like, I think some people have both. Some people have neither. That's where mine breaks down. But I just wanted to, like, you want to grab him and go, like, look, dude, you're a young guy. You're in good shape. You got a good-looking girlfriend. Like, just shave it, right? And then eventually you'll never age. Like, yeah, you're bald at, like, I don't know. He probably looked like he was 30. Like, all right, you're bald at 30. It sucks really, really, really hard. Okay, but, like, you know, it's a good hat collection you can go through. And bald's kind of beautiful and cool and kind of masculine. And, you know, by the time you get to 50, you won't look 50. You'll still look 40. Right? That's the Phil Collins thing.
John, is this superpower only with toupees or does it work with wigs as well?
It works with everything.
All right.
Yeah.
Wait, it works with what else?
Wigs. I don't know if it was just male-specific toupees.
Extensions, things like that.
Extensions, yeah. Wigs.
Yep. I'm good at all of that stuff.
I like that. We need to have this needs to be part of the next John Ramos show.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Well, it's halftime, and the scoreboard's not looking good. You're feeling low. You're not sure you can pull out the win, but that's when you dig deep. Lift your head up. You say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists. Take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
See, and that's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies. There's so much to do.
Yeah, you could play countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. That's new. I don't remember that from the old Monopoly game, but it sounds awesome. And you can charge players rent for your iconic properties. Great.
You can even work with your friends to crack open community chests and in tournaments to get extra rewards and climb the leaderboard. I'm in for sure.
So get out there, put on your game face, download Monopoly Go right now for free at the App Store or Google Play. Let's go.
If you do the quick math, the less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your products or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep, which is obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So reduce your cost. Reduce the headaches. Smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial, management, inventory, HR under one platform. And one source of truth with NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud, so there's no hardware required. And you can access from anywhere. So you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes onto one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Right now, backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. So head to netsuite.com/Patrick. netsuite.com/Patrick.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Doug Gottlieb in for Dan, the Danettes, along with my guys, Dan Beyer. Of course, Jason Stewart and John Ramos. It's the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio. We've got a great next, 20 minutes for you. We'll do some baseball first, some college football second, and... Look, Major League Baseball. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Dan. Okay. Look, the idea of having an umpire or taking away the umpire and having it basically called by computer or a robot or the idea of not having a living human being calling balls and strikes. It feels like closer and closer. Right? We got AI technology, which anybody who has kids knows. Kids use it to write their papers. I'm just fascinated on what actual baseball players think of the idea of having some form of robot umpire. Let's welcome in Matt Holliday, of course, a 7-time All-Star, 4-time Silver Slugger. Should be noted that his son Jackson is the number one prospect in minor league baseball after being the number one pick of the Orioles in the minor league draft in the amateur draft going back to last year. Matt, good morning to you. Where are you on umpires as opposed to the robots in New York calling balls and strikes?
Well, I think that AAA has the challenge where they can challenge. And I don't know what the exact rules are, how often you can challenge it, but I at least like the idea that a hitter gets an opportunity to challenge the balls and strikes. They did it at the Futures game. It was the first time I'd seen it in person, and it was a pretty cool deal where the hitter steps out, challenges, and then they go to the Jumbotron in the outfield, and it shows this technology where almost like kind of like tennis, where it shows the ball coming through, and then, you know, it's a ball instead of a strike, or a strike instead of a ball, and then, you know, that's the result. So I don't know if I'm in favor of completely going to, you know, sort of this just umpires standing there relaying the information they're getting from the technology. But I think that the hitter having an opportunity to challenge one pitch in a bat, or I don't know what exactly, you know, how much or what the rule should be, but I do like the idea in a big spot if an umpire gets carried away with the emotions of the game, or, you know, you have an umpire that's struggling that night and not doing a very good job, and it's a big call, and it's a strike three or a pitch that's a big point in the game that's going to impact the outcome of the game, that you have a chance to go however you want to phrase it, a computer or something that's totally doesn't have, you know, take the emotion out of the game and just kind of is what it is. So I'm, you know, as a hitter, I like to be right, particularly in and out. I understand that some of the technology might cause, you know, some high strikes or some low strikes, maybe some breaking balls that end up almost in the dirt, catching the bottom half of the strike zone. But I'm okay with that if you get the in and out right. Those are the ones. It's really hard as a hitter to cover off the plate both away and inside at times that umpires give. So I am in favor of some sort of technology.
Yeah, I guess the fear is that it turns into football, where, you know, football replay, as good as it is and as many games as it's changed and bad calls as it's saved, we have reached the point where even on a game-winning touchdown, we can't just, like, celebrate organically. Hold on. We got to wait to see if that one – right? It takes away some of the organic nature to it, and you don't want that. In addition to which, like, I don't know, and again, I know I obviously didn't play it nearly at your level, but I don't know, kind of the cool thing about baseball has always been that no park is uniform, right? So everybody has their own park rules. And no umpire's strike zone is uniform. So, hey, this guy likes the low ones. I don't know. I kind of think that's the beauty to it, is the human factor. And I fear that we're taking the human factor out of it.
Yeah, I see that. But, I mean, then there's the idea of hitting 97-mile-an-hour fastballs. Well, this umpire likes the outside, off the outside corner. Yeah, that's great that he likes that. But that doesn't make it, you know, easy to hit or even possible to hit. So, I don't know. I think that if we have the technology to get the balls and strikes right, I don't see why we don't use it. You know, I'm okay with the current situation, but as a hitter, there's nothing more maddening than having counts changed in the pitcher's favor. Because, you know, when we have technology, when you get it goes from a 2-1 count, I'm in a good spot, to a 1-2 count because he misses a pitch that's clearly off the plate. I have respect for umpires. It's a hard job, and I think that all in all, they do a really, really good job. But if we get to the point where it's quick to have, you know, very, very accurate balls and strikes, then I'm good with getting it right over tradition, you know, in this situation, because it doesn't take long, unlike replay in the NFL, where you have to run over and get under the hood and somebody, you know, could take up to a few minutes to check it. This is instant notification of what's, you know, a ball or a strike.
How do you fix the Yankees?
Well, I think at this point they've gotten a little bit old. They're hurt. They're banged up. A lot of their pitchers are hurt. Guys that they've counted on to really carry the rotation has been kind of a mess. So obviously having a ton of money and being able to go out in the free agent market and buy essentially, you know, whoever you want, is a great thing, but you have to have an influx of young talent, coming and being able to supplement free agents as opposed to rely on free agents. So, I think sometimes you just can't help injuries, you know, and sometimes a guy like, you know, Stanton, who, at one point was a elite player and a great athlete, Injuries have taken its toll on him, and Rizzo's hasn't hit for power this year, and he's had some injuries, and so I think you just have to be careful of having too many older players that are somewhat injury prone or starting to head in that sort of down part of their career where. And then it really tests your depth of how good your young players are, and they just haven't performed maybe to what they thought. So I think it's been kind of a culmination of a lot of things going wrong this year. Several teams have had that. You had the Mets and the Padres and the Cardinals all also. Coming into this season, we all would have guessed with an extra playoff spot that all those teams would have been. Probably right in the middle of playoffs, but it looks like none of them will be in. So it's baseball can be weird like that, where a couple key injuries and a couple guys have down years, and next thing it can look really bad.
Are they built for the past era? Right? How much of it is injuries, but how much of it is, like, look, baseball has dramatically changed. You and I talked about this in person, talked a bit on my show, which is now athleticism now a priority on the base pass. It's a priority. You have to be able to cover your position, can't hide you with the shift, right?
Yeah.
And it feels like it's a different sport, and so the construct of teams has to be different, and these teams are just slow to adjust to everything that's changed within this season.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good point. I do think that sometimes you're sort of tied to a contract, right? So you're tied into some contracts that you've already signed, sort of pre-shift and looking at the game a little bit differently with athleticism. But I do think you're right in that it is a more athletic game. I think the ability to manufacture runs and to do things a little different. It's coming back around, to where we had gotten to the point where it was sort of everybody just wanted home run hitters and guys that walk and play that. And now it looks like.
Did we lose him, or is that me? Okay, we lost Matt. We'll get him back in 1 second. This is the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Matt Holliday's our guest, 7-time All-Star, 4-time Silver Sluggers. We're discussing things in Major League Baseball. I do if there he is. There he is. Matt, let me end with this. The Dodgers have won 10 in a row. Now, I think we can all say, hey, the Braves are the best team in baseball and be okay with that. It felt like a transition year for the Dodgers, so they really didn't do much. Fix the bullpen, fix the rotation. Everybody thinks they're going after Shohei and then going to fix things next year. But now you're sitting at 73-46, winners of 10 games in a row. How much of this is real and how much of this is just a heater?
I think they're good. I mean, I think they're, they still have a lot of great players. I mean, they have two of the best players in the league with Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. They still have Clayton Kershaw, who when he's healthy is pitching like he, peak Clayton Kershaw. They've done an incredible job despite picking later in the first round, and not having a ton of high drafts of developing a lot of really good young players and a lot of impact pitchers. So when they go to their farm system, it seems like the guys they bring up come up with and have an impact. And so they have some sneaky good players and like Will Smith and some of these guys that out on the West Coast maybe don't get the love that they would if they played on the East Coast. So I think they just continue to be good and roll out division winning seasons and so I think they're good. I mean they have experience. A lot of their players, their veteran players have won a World Series, and I just think they're going to be tough out, and I think that they play well at home. It's a very tough place to go in and win at Dodger Stadium. So I definitely think that they might be flying under the radar a little bit with the way as good as the Braves have played. But I think the Dodgers are going to be right in the middle of the National League when it comes to playoff time.
Awesome stuff. Matty, thanks so much for joining us, dude. Have a great day. Good luck in whatever pickleball you're playing in today, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Okay. All right. Thanks, Doug.
Matt Holliday, pickleball All-American, burgeoning pickleball star who also played 15 years in the major leagues and was a 7-time All-Star and 4-time Silver Slugger. The supremely versatile all-electric EQB from Mercedes-Benz. It's impressively techy and surprisingly roomy with available settings, seating up to 7. The vehicle is all-electric feeling, all Mercedes. Learn more at MBUSA.com/EQB. All right. I don't know how many people know this. Matt Holliday was supposed to go to Oklahoma State. He was the number one ranked quarterback in the country. His dad at the time was the head baseball coach. His brother was a baseball player. And now his brother's the baseball coach at Oklahoma State. And all things revolving around Oklahoma State. We'll bring in Brett McMurphy, who's also an Oklahoma State alum, but most known for being a college football insider with the Action Network. And Brett, I think a lot of people continue to react to the downfall of the Pac-12, not because of what has happened over the past couple weeks, but because of what could have happened over the past couple years. Why didn't the Pac-12 go for the juggler and kill the Big 12 2 years ago, which ultimately has ended up killing the Pac-12 today?
On your show for the next hour, and I can go through it blow by blow. No, I'm kidding. Because basically their presidents felt like they were above the Big 12 schools because of academics and other factors. They had no interest in adding the schools from the Big 12 that were left over. Bob Bowlesby, the former commissioner, went to the Pac-12 and said, hey, let's merge. You can take our 8 schools. You'll have a Pac-20. And basically the Pac-12 said no. And then Brett Yormark comes in as the new commissioner. He goes early with the TV deal. He gets that done. And then, you know, great story yesterday by Brady McCullough, the LA Times, you know, laid out some details behind the scenes of what happened over the past couple of years. And basically there were two or three main sticking points on what doomed the Pac-12. Obviously, it's not that simple. But one is George Kliavkoff put a big emphasis on trying to get the California Board of Regents to block UCLA's move to the Big Ten, which I guess technically they could, but realistically, you know, nobody in that position is going to keep back a university from moving to another conference. But still, he put a lot of effort in that, tried to work that behind the scenes. That obviously did not work. And then ultimately, Brady reported that, you know, ESPN came to the Pac-12 with an offer of about $30 million per school, which is what the Big 12 ultimately got. But one of the presidents had a, quote, professor on his campus that ran the media rights value info for them and said, no, we're worth $50 million per school instead of $30. So they turned down the $30, told ESPN they want $50 million per school. ESPN said no. They never got a deal, and now that the conference is blown up and Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, and Stanford are trying to, you know, scrape something together here.
Along the heels of that, I also heard, and Brett, I can't remember if it was from the same article or not, but a message that was the conference wasn't too hurt that Colorado was leaving and they felt they had a suitable replacement. Is that true? Was it San Diego State? Was there a backup plan that could have navigated that Colorado departure that maybe they felt didn't have an effect on the conference?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, after the fact, it's easy for people to say, oh, yeah, we didn't want that school in our conference. And, yeah, Colorado has not had much, if any, success since they got the Pac-12 except for one season. But to get San Diego State in, it's not that easy. San Diego State, depending on when they left the Mountain West, would have to pay either $17 or $34 million. So, yeah, you could say they could slide in there. Guys, it's just like when you know how this works. A fan base, you're after a recruit, and you think you've got this recruit locked in. And at the last minute, he signs with your rival school, and then you're like, oh, yeah, we didn't want him anyway. He's not that good. That's how it is with this thing with Colorado. They left Colorado until Colorado wasn't a member, and then suddenly it's like, well, they're not that good anyway. You can say what you want about Colorado. You know, you're in the Denver market. That's pretty significant. Dion brings a lot of attention to that. And you're losing a Power 5 program that brings in Power 5 media rights revenue. And it's easy to kind of dismiss them, but it's kind of comical. It's like a fan base justifying losing a recruit to another school.
It's interesting because this is a transition year, right? Like the Big 12 brings in new schools but still has Oklahoma and Texas. the Pac-12 obviously has changed dramatically, will change dramatically this year. How does all that affect the actual season, you think?
Well, I know from talking to folks at the different schools that the schools leaving, SC, UCLA, Texas, and Oklahoma, they're, I think, half joking but half serious. Like, you know, how are we going to get treated by the officials? They know what the fan base is going to be like. I mean, Doug, I'm sure you're going to be for the final. You're going to be in Stillwater for the final bedlam. I mean, it's going to be crazy, fan wise. But you know, there is some concern. You know, when you talk to these schools privately about how are they going to be treated on the field. You know, I don't think there's any vendetta out there to screw the schools that are leaving, that this is their last year in the league. But again, that's human nature, and I guarantee the first bad call against one of these schools, you know, you can see the instant outrage on Twitter, like, oh, the Big 12's, you know, they're paying back OU and Texas right now, or the Pac-12's putting it to USC and UCLA or Oregon and Washington. Whether that's legit or not, I don't know. I think the officials are above that, you know, the ones that do these games. But again, that's going to be in the back of mind of everybody if you see some calls go against these schools that are getting out this year.
Is it going to be a yearly tradition now and wondering on who's going to stay in the ACC? I mean, like, it felt like that's what this week felt like.
A tradition unlike any other.
They're going to stick around for 2024. How long can this go on in that conference?
Yeah, that's a great point. And yeah, it is. Look, Florida State has been very vocal. Their president, their board of regents has said, you know, look, it's not if we're going to leave, it's when and how. And, you know, the deadline to leave before the 24 season was a couple days ago, August 15th. But yeah, so now the clock starts on next August 15th. And I think at some point, Florida State, Clemson, possibly North Carolina, maybe Miami, Virginia, I mean, the list goes on, will try to get out of the ACC. I mean, look, you can pay the exit fee, but then you've got to negotiate, you know, basically 10 to 12 years of TV revenue that you would owe the league or the grant of rights. But, yeah, I think this is going to continue. And that's why, you know, going back, Doug, when you asked about the Pac-12, the future of the Pac-12 was never dependent on the Pac-12. It was always on the Big Ten. When did the Big Ten decide they would add USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington? And that's what made the Pac-12 in such a precarious position. And it's the same with the ACC. They're gonna remain only as long as those schools don't leave, because then they'll go to the Big Ten and the ACC as a Big 12 guy. The reason the Big 12 staying together is, look, nobody else wants us. I mean, the SEC got who they wanted. The Big Ten doesn't want anybody. So there's nowhere for these guys to go. So because of that, the Big 12 has kind of actually risen above everything, and the ACC is kind of waiting there. And you're right. This is going to be an annual occurrence. We should celebrate it like Festivus. But until these guys actually announce that they're leaving, this is going to be continually on the back of everybody's mind is, okay, yeah, you're together now, but how long until, you know, schools A through Z say they're going to leave the conference?
We're a couple weeks away from seeing Deion's first squad, right? He's going to get a chance to, on Fox, they'll take on TCU. And there's a lot more to this game than just a future Big 12 opponent taking on TCU, who went to the national championship game last year. There's, you know, bragging rights within the DFW, which is where, you know, so many of these players come from. What do we guess this first year of Colorado Buffalo is going to look like?
Doug, I think the over-under for the win total was 3.5. And the guys that do our analytics at Action Network, I think, are projecting them at 2 or 3 wins. They're not going to get to a bowl game. Maybe somewhere down the road they will in the next few years. I agree with those projections. I think they're really going to struggle. They've obviously had a ton of turnover. Deion did great at Jackson State. It's not to say he won't do great at Colorado, but I just think this first year, depth is going to be a real concern. Obviously, the transfer portal issues have been well documented. And ultimately, I think I saw saw something the other day. They may only have like 5 defensive linemen. If that's accurate, you're not going to get through an entire season with 5 defensive linemen. And if you are, your defense is not going to stop many people. I think they'll put up some points. I think they'll be, you know, explosive on offense. I just think the defense isn't going to be able to stop anybody. And the schedule, again, they're projected to only be favored in two of their 12 games. So unless they pull off a handful of upsets, they're probably looking at, you know, somewhere between 2 and 4 wins, which, yeah, of course, will feed the narrative of the Pac-12. Well, we didn't really need him.
Yeah. Well, but and it'll be interesting to see what he's able to do in recruiting and in building in short order. It's hard to flip it in a year, but 2 years is kind of the expectation. Brett McMurphy, check him out in the Action Network. Follow him on social media. Brett, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Coming up next on the Dan Patrick Show, we'll play The Price is Right with sports memorabilia. That's next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Well, it's halftime and the scoreboard's not looking good. You're feeling low. You're not sure you can pull out the win. But that's when you dig deep. Lift your head up. You say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists. Take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
See, and that's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies. There's so much to do.
Yeah, you could play countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. That's new. I don't remember that from the old Monopoly game, but it sounds awesome. And you can charge players rent for your iconic properties. Great.
You can even work with your friends to crack open community chests and in tournaments to get extra rewards and climb the leaderboard. I'm in for sure.
So get out there, put on your game face, download Monopoly Go right now for free at the App Store or Google Play. Let's go.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
We know that quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for you and your partner whenever you want. 2 beds in one, firmer or softer on each side, you decide. And it helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature as well, quiets their snoring, so you stay sleeping comfortably all night long. Sleep Number does everything. My Sleep Number setting is 75. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep. They provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. You will never need another bed. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Doug Gottlieb. Dan Byron for Dan the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show, Fox Sports Radio. And just as we did last hour, and we do every day on the Doug Gottlieb Show, afternoons 3 to 5 Eastern on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, we play a game. So this game is, we continue with The Price is Right of sports memorabilia, correct?
Yes, that's a decent way to put it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, it's a bit of an auction, but we just want to get the closest price. This on the heels of a Mickey Mantle game-worn 1958 jersey that is right now on the auction block. And the highest bid, as we speak, is $3.2 million. So I just went to eBay and looked at different sports memorabilia and wanted to see how close you guys could get to guessing the correct price for these items. Doug, you're up 2-1-0. So you have 2 correct. John Ramos has 1 and Jason Stewart has 0. Jason, we're going to start the bidding with you on this one. You know, Doug made some news this week when he interviewed Joey Bosa, and Bosa had no interest in watching the quarterback Netflix show that featured Patrick Mahomes. How much on eBay could we get for a 2020 Panini Playbook Patrick Mahomes, Joey Bosa face-to-face relic autograph, 7 out of 10? So it's a trading card. How much Would you pay, or do you think that this card is worth right now on eBay? Autographed by Mahomes and Bosa, face-to-face, there's only 10 of them.
Wow, I really need to tap into my nerd mode here. I'm going to say $117.
$117. John Ramos.
I'll say $500.
$500. Doug? $500, $117.
I'm going to go $501.
Doug knows how to play the game, and you'd get quite the discount. Right now, it's going for $2,599.99.
The thing that threw me off, I mean, obviously, that's a lot of money, but also 7 out of 10, isn't that the rating of the condition?
It's funny that you mentioned that. There's only 10 of those, so that's the actual 7 of 10. Correct.
Okay.
I think we've proven I am awful at this. I'm an awful memorabilia estimator.
No, I actually think you, like, I wouldn't, you're thinking to yourself, like, why would I spend more than $100 on this thing? And somebody out there's like, I'll spend, how much did you say it was? $2,000?
$2,599.99. So just shy of $2,600.
What about, I'd like to know what the reserve is on that one. I don't think they're getting
to it. What about an autographed, full-sized helmet of the New York Jets by Aaron Rodgers that also says J-E-T-S on it? Now, there are multiple of these. A Fanatics helmet, full-sized autographed Jets helmet signed by Aaron Rodgers. John Ramos, your guess on the price of this.
Yeah, I'm going to go up. If that card was $2,000.
This is
right, I'm going to go higher. I'm going to go $7,000.
$7,000. Okay.
There's multiple. Do we know how many there are?
No, it's just one helmet, just a regular full-sized helmet. That's all it is. Jets helmet autographed by Aaron Rodgers.
2 minutes.
I'm going to go $500.
Okay, $500. Jason Stewart.
That sounds about right, but I'm going to go 501.
Oh, man.
Jason Stewart is on the board. $1,299. Boom. Yes, just shy of $1,300. John Ramos is $7,000 for that. Just a bit of an overpay, but Jason Stewart is on the board. Doug, right now, with a two-item lead as we go into our final item of this round. Doug, we start the bidding with you. How much would you pay for an autographed Doug Gottlieb NBA con lanyard and an NBA wristband? So you must have signed an autograph at NBA con.
Really?
And someone is now selling it on eBay. How much would you pay for it? Plus, you get a wristband. Like, you get an NBA wristband with it. How much would you pay for this?
You got to be kidding. That doesn't actually
You also
really
wrote
exist.
FSR on it as well. Like, instead of 44, you wrote FSR. How much would you pay for this?
$10.
$10. Jason Stewart?
This is a joke.
Dead serious.
I'm going to go $7.99.
$7.99. John Ramos?
$10.01.
It is John Ramos's, because right now it could be yours for $29.99.
Yeah, good job, Doug.
Yes, there
I
you
think
go.
The value is actually, it's the first ever NBA con. That's the real value. Had I not signed it, it would probably be worth more.
All right, John's within two, but you can get that Doug lanyard for just $30.
You're telling me that Doug put in a bid for $29.99?
No, had I put in a bid, it would have already been mine. Right? I listed it for sale. That's what I did to increase the value. Coming up next to the Dan Patrick Show, we'll tell you why this Michael Orr story has captured the attention of the entire country. That's next.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, it's halftime, and the scoreboard's not looking good. You're feeling low. You're not sure you can pull out the win. But that's when you dig deep. Lift your head up. You say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists. Take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
See, and that's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime. with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies. There's so much to do.
Yeah, you could play countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. That's new. I don't remember that from the old Monopoly game, but it sounds awesome. And you can charge players rent for your iconic properties. Great.
You can even work with your friends to crack open community chests and in tournaments to get extra rewards and climb the leaderboard. I'm in for sure.
So get out there, put on your game face, download Monopoly Go right now for free at the App Store or Google Play. Let's go.
From the versatile EQB to the sublime EQS sedan, Mercedes-Benz makes electric extraordinary. The vehicle's all electric. The feeling is all Mercedes. The choice is yours. Learn more. MBUSA.com/EQ.